Hi, this is Jerome Davis. Welcome to the second Burning Coal Theater Company Into the Fire podcast series. Today, our guest here at Burning Coal is Sarah Phoenix, who is the owner and artistic director of Cirque Duval and Celestine Movement Arts here in Raleigh. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah, you've been involved in aerial work for some time. Tell us how you got started in that field.
Well, I first started out doing performance art and started a nonprofit group in my early to mid-20s with a group, and we did a lot of stuff around social justice issues. And as I got more and more into performance art, I started to pick up some circus arts.
Uh-huh. Where was this? Was this in Raleigh?
Raleigh and Durham, yes.
What was the name of that company?
Awakening Change.
Awakening Change, okay, good.
And as I got more and more into circus arts, I moved away from performance art for a bit, and I got into fire dancing and hoop spinning and aerial acrobatics. Mm-hmm. I first got into aerial hoop, which is the lira, and then into silks and trapeze. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've kind of made a full return back to my performance art days, but now bringing circus arts to the table and interweaving these two art forms.
Cirque Duval is going very well. You're having quite a success over there in your studios on, Davie Street?
Over on Hargett Street.
Hargett Street, yeah. Sorry.
Around the corner of Hargett and Dawson Street in the ground floor of the Hugh Building. Yeah, we're in our, it's 3 years now that we've had our studio space open, and we've experienced enormous growth since then. We were teaching out of other venues around town for about a year while our studio was under construction. But it's just been amazing how quickly the community has flourished.
Uh-huh. There was a great need for that kind of work, and there was nobody really doing it at that time, right?
Yeah. We were getting together in, like, old warehouses or people's backyards or in parks to practice and rehearse and skill, you know, trade together. And it just was very obvious that we needed a space where we could rehearse and train and also teach our craft with the bigger community.
Can you give us a little bit of an idea of the various kinds of things you teach at Cirque Duval and at Celestine?
Yeah. At Cirque Duval Studios, we teach aerial silks. We teach static and dance trapeze. Mm-hmm. We also teach partner acrobatics, aerial hoop, hoop dance, fire safety for fire dancing, fire safety certifications. Mm-hmm. And other things like aerial boot camp. So we have a variety of fitness classes that are and flexibility classes that tie in with the acrobatics at Cirque Duval.
And you have a number of teachers on staff for that, right? How many people have you employed over there?
I think we have about 30 folks on our staff.
So yeah. You must have something going on pretty much all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you have a background in performance art. Where did you go to school?
I did not.
You did not go to school?
No,
okay, interesting.
I am self-trained, self-created.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of dance trainings and retreats. Mm-hmm. And traveled around the country doing various intensives with different teachers that inspired me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've pretty much created my own map of schooling based on what, based on following whatever my highest passion was at that moment.
Yeah. And is there a certification process in these various fields, or how does one do that if one wants to teach in that area?
There are some certification processes. For some of the art forms, other art forms are still so up and coming that their certifications don't exist, but we do have our own certification programs in place, and a lot of our instructors are certified at NECA in New England, which is a big circus arts training center here on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Are there hotbeds of circus training across the country or around the world?
Yes, absolutely.
Where are they?
Montreal. That's
of
a big
course.
One.
Yeah, that makes
really
sense.
Big one.
Yeah.
There's also the New England Center for Circus Arts.
Right.
And there's also a pretty great circus community out in San Francisco as well.
Right.
That's around the athletic playground.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But it's happening in a lot of places. I was in Cardiff, Wales a couple of weeks ago, and they had a huge facility there that was almost all circus arts related. Very interesting. So so tell me about, let's go back in time just a little bit. Tell me about your background. What was your family like? Where did you grow up and that sort of thing? Were you born in Raleigh? Did you move here at some point, and why?
My family is originally from Southern Florida, West mm-hmm. Palm Beach, and we moved here to Raleigh when I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
Work.
Yeah.
Raleigh was really starting to boom. This was in the late 80s.
Right.
And I'm the oldest of four, and I grew up in a not particularly stable family environment,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a lot of struggles and challenges in my family life growing up, for sure, which has fueled my creativity in a way, and has definitely helped to shape me into the person I am today.
Well, did you do high school here?
Yes, I went to Broughton, just right down the street.
Right down the street, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing a residency there in December, or January, actually, and directing, our education director, Jory Slotke, will be directing Julius Caesar with the drama mm-hmm. kids there. We thought that would be a good good play to do in an election year. So
yeah,
so
absolutely.
We'll be over at Broughton, and also their drama teacher Julie Florin will be here as the music director for The Wiz in December. So we have a very tight connection with Broughton. It's a wonderful school and produces many good artists over the years. How did you get into performance art then? What was the genesis of that for you?
Well, I was always into dance and visual arts growing up. And I had a big political activist bone in me as a teenager and as a young person, and
yeah.
I spent a lot of time going to rallies and organizing protest and, you know, doing all this kinds of work. And I mean, my main concern was, how I see all these struggles and all this trouble in the world, how do I make this better?
Mm-hmm.
And what I was doing didn't really seem to be helping the way that I wanted it to. Yeah, I felt like there's a lot of weight on my shoulders. It was very oppressive, like trying to fight all these bigger than me problems mm-hmm. in my young mind. And so I started to think about, how do I trace these back to the source? Like, what's the root of all the woes of the world?
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized that there was a basic level of like consciousness and unconsciousness that was happening in the human psyche. There was, people were either acting from places of love or people were acting from places of fear. And it was the places of fear that was causing all the trouble. And so I got really interested in Jungian psychology, depth psychology, and I got really into meditation. And from there, I just found ways to weave in these things that were important to me and express them in art, and using performance as a way to get the message out mm-hmm. to help inspire people.
What are some of those causes? I'm just curious. We don't have to belabor any of them, but I'm just curious, what were your motivating causes as a young person?
When I was a teenager, I was very interested in human rights issues.
Uh-huh.
So I was a part of an organization called ARA, which was Anti-Racist Action. I also helped to found the first LGBT club at Broughton High School when
nice.
I was there.
Very nice.
And actually the only teacher we could get to support us was the theater teacher there at the time.
Yeah.
And some environmental stuff too, but you know, a lot of things having to do with you know, corporations taking advantage of mm-hmm. the general populace. And so, you know, I was mm-hmm. out protesting the WTO and the IMF and uh-huh. all these things.
And did you travel around to do that?
I did.
Uh-huh. So
yeah.
did you come across, I'm just curious, did you encounter performance artists or theater artists or other kinds of artists who were influential in your life at that time?
Absolutely. There was definitely a lot of puppeteers
uh-huh.
people doing stuff like Paper Hen Puppet or Bread and Puppet up in Vermont that were, you know, using these giant puppets to make political statements and bringing them to the rallies and to the protests. I'm also really deeply inspired by folks like Marina Abramović and Yoko Ono. You know, like really experimental stuff that's about bringing people into the present moment.
Bread and Puppet are very, very connected to the idea of going to the places where people without wealth exist as well. If I'm remembering right about their aesthetic, they like to take their work into minority communities or low-income urban or rural communities. Is that right?
Yeah.
So having experienced some of that as a young person, you decided I can do that too. And set out to create a performance art collective. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess that is. It's funny how things just come together because it wasn't premeditated. It's just kind of what I fell into. Mm-hmm. These were issues that were important to me, and I had a few other friends who were artists, and they had a similar vision, and we started collaborating. And next thing I know, we have a whole production happening, and you know, it was quite a incredible handful of years that.
I'm just curious because I hear artists talk about wanting to avoid the political in their work, wanting to avoid making statements or being didactic, which I think is probably an ambition of most of us. So when you think about that part of your life, do you think about it in a positive way now? Do you think about it as being useful to the people who experienced it? Or do you think about it as having been more didactic than maybe you would have wanted it to be? How do you remember that part of your life?
I think the political statements and the awareness we were raising at the time was very, like, there was a need for that. It was really well received and really well, like, really welcomed in the communities that we were performing in. Mm-hmm. I don't like to make things so political now these days. My focus is definitely on the bigger picture, which is going down to like healing basic traumas in the psyche, you know, raising awareness in the mind, in the audience. And they're recognizing, oh, where in my day-to-day life am I acting from a place of love, and when am I acting from a place of fear? And helping people to put their own lives back into their own hands, if that makes sense.
Sure. There's a very physical element to everything pretty much that you've talked about so far, and I'm just wondering if you feel like the person's physical well-being is connected to their mental state, and is connected to their awareness of others and other, you know, concerns around them. Is that part of the work of Cirque du Vol?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that I found so inspiring about circus arts and what drew me to them was how empowering they were for people, and how life-changing. You know, and these are for folks that aren't even, like, you know, particularly consider themselves artists or performers, but just, you know, I'm going to come in and do something that I never thought I could do, and it challenges the story they've created in their mind about who they are, and shows them that they're capable of much more than they ever thought imaginable. And that is a really beautiful thing to witness.
So it isn't just the abs.
It's not about that, you know?
Nice. That's very nice. Has anyone, since you started working in this field, has anyone surprised you, anyone who didn't think of themselves as an artist, but who came in and was able to create something artistically that surprised you?
Yeah, absolutely. I see that with, like, you know, some of the moms that come in. I see it with some of, like, the younger kids that come in. Mm-hmm. They just really, really see them, like, it totally changes their lives. Mm-hmm. And it changes how they feel about themselves.
The moms are thinking, I'll just sit off to the side and watch. And
next thing you know, they have glitter all over their face and a big headdress in their hair, and they're on the trapeze.
Yes, great kid. You are going to put these two things together, performance art and circus arts, in the creation of what I would call a play, The Fringe Dwellers, which runs here at Burning Coal Saturday, September 26th at 7 p.m. Can you talk a little bit about the Fringe Dwellers, how it came about, who's involved with it, what its goals are?
Yeah, absolutely. The Fringe Dwellers is definitely a hybrid of circus arts, performance art, modern dance, and improvisational art. And also brings in elements of movement meditation. We have experimental projections and lighting happening with sound and also live music. And the idea is to explore, kind of take the audience on this journey, if you will. That's an exploration of their own consciousness. And so we touch upon things like sciencey things like quantum physics. We also talk about things like intuition and trusting yourself, cultivating presence. There's a partner trapeze act that's about the push-pull between states of love and fear and how those come out in relationship with others. So it's in the first half an hour of the show, before the show really kicks off, is just movement meditations happening and relaxation with music and light to really calm the nervous system and get the audience into a really relaxed state of mindfulness.
You said that the play talks about these things. Does it literally use text or written words to talk about it, or is it a language, a physical vocabulary, or both?
There's a lot of physical vocabulary for sure. There is some talking that happens, which is like pre-recorded sound clips that are woven in that have different messages at different times. And then there's also occasional messages that'll come through in the projections.
Projections, right. It must be, you know, each time you create a piece, you must need to find a different physical vocabulary. Is that difficult, or does that happen, you know, in advance of deciding to create the piece? Where does the physical vocabulary of a movement piece or an aerial circus piece come from? Is it obvious when you're working on the piece, or is it something you have to strain to find, or how do you determine that so that it doesn't look the same as the last piece that you've worked on?
Well, we're using a variety of different movement art languages. So first we find which movement art lends itself to the nature of the story that we're sharing in the piece.
Is that a discovery process, like trial and error, or how do you come to that, to decide on that? Is it just a
intuitive knowing?
Intuitive understanding?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
You know it when you see it.
Yeah, yeah. My mind is highly, I mean, I have more ideas than I could ever accomplish in a lifetime. My mind is highly creative, and so there's no shortage of like how to do the thing. It's more like honing in on one that's going to be the best, and going
Maybe
with it.
Yeah. Who are some of the other artists working with you on the Fringe Dwellers?
We have several of our instructors and performers at Cirque du Vol, acrobats and aerial performers. We've also got some modern dancers who teach at Celestine Movement Arts. We have a new dance theater company that we started out of Celestine called Moda, which is led by Renee O.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's doing a group piece.
Video is a significant part of the Fringe Dwellers. I've peeked in on your rehearsals a couple of times, and it's quite spectacular. Who's involved with the creation of the video elements of the show?
The projections are Timothy Lemuel, and he's been working many years with local... He's done some stuff with theater, but most of his stuff is with musicians. And so he creates really incredible backdrops and has the projections at different angles and levels.
What sort of, do you know what kind of projectors are being used on the show? Is it a single projector or multiple?
We have multiple projectors, and I don't know a whole lot about this, except that it has a really high amount of lumens.
Very good, yeah. Necessary in a theater, because you have to project through the stage lights, right? Very good. Very good. The Fringe Dwellers, if someone wanted to get tickets for that for this coming Saturday, the 26th of September at 7 p.m., how would they do that?
Visit CirqueDuVol.com, and underneath performances, there's a page for Fringe Dwellers.
Okay. Is there a phone number they can call as well?
Absolutely. You can reach us at 919-615-2484, and that's our main office.
Very good. We'll be hosting that or sharing our space with you guys for that this coming Saturday, September 26th at 7 p.m. here at the Murphy School, which is located at 224 Polk Street in Raleigh. Do you have anything else you'd like to say about Cirque Duval, about Celestine Movement, or about the Fringe Dwellers before we sign off today, Sarah?
I think we about covered it. I'm really excited.
Well, we're excited about having it here. We're looking forward to possibly teaming up with you guys next June for our second stage series, which we call Wait Till You See This. And so I'm very much looking forward to seeing what you produce and possibly helping you with it next year. It would be lovely to work with Cirque Duval. You guys have a fantastic reputation here in the community. Sarah, thank you. Sarah Phoenix of Cirque Duval and Celestine Movement Arts.
Thank you.
Follow Burning Coal Theater Company at Twitter or Instagram at Burning Coal TC. We're also on Facebook. Burning Coal will present its own aerial play, Asylum, co-produced with Only Child Aerial Theater of Brooklyn, New York, October 15th through November 1st here at the Murphy School, 224 Polk Street in Raleigh. Tickets available at 919-834-4001 or on the web at burningcoal.org. Thank you.